a very prophetic section, especially chapter 11 and 12, that is exciting, but yet, you know, can be somewhat challenging. For those who are going to be listening to this on CD or on the internet, sorry there's no video. Our video guy's not here. But at least it's being recorded, correcto? All right, thank you. So Daniel 10 is going to be an introduction to the prophecies in Daniel 11 and 12. And so we're going to see the lead into it, and we're going to slow down and look at these angels that visit Daniel, and we're going to explore the concept of angels a little bit because it's really quite intriguing. And to me, it's amazing to think of the spiritual powers that are around us right now. We just aren't aware of them because with our physical eyes, we cannot see them. Yes. Exactly, right. So we saw last week that Daniel had this, the prayer of Daniel. And then before the prayer was over, the issue was given to Gabriel to go down and comfort Daniel. But we see it took him to the end of his prayer, or the middle, before he actually arrived. Well, we're going to see another angel appear in chapter 10, but before we get there, though, we're going to see this vision that he sees, and it's a troublesome vision, and that's really going to set up chapter 11 and 12, okay? So let's read, and who would like to read verse 1 through 6? Go ahead.
In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a message was revealed to Daniel, who was named Belteshazzar, and the message was true and one of great conflict, but he understood the message and had an understanding of the vision. In those days, I, Daniel, had been mourning for 3 entire weeks. I did not eat any tasty food, nor did meat or wine enter my mouth, nor did I use any ointment at all until the entire 3 weeks was complete. On the 24th day of the first month, while I was by the great bank of the great river, that is the Tigris, I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, there was a certain man dressed in linen, whose waist was girded with a belt of pure gold of Uphaz. Don't know if that's right. His body also was like beryl. His face had the appearance of lightning. His eyes were like flaming torches. His arms and feet were like the gleam of polished bronze, and the sound of his words like
all right, thank you. So here we see some interesting things that take place, and we're going to first be introduced to the idea that he had this message, and it was a message of this astounding conflict, and it's so troubling that he doesn't eat for many days. And so we see the date of it, the third year of Cyrus, the king of Persia. We're at the end of the 70-year captivity, all right, because Cyrus, the king of Persia, allowed the release of some of the captives back to Judah this time under Ezra's watch. And here there's this message that revealed to Daniel, and it was true of great conflict. Now, what does your Bible say in verse 1 instead of great conflict? Is anything different? Verse 1. It says great conflict. Everybody's warfare. That's the American standard. Says warfare. Anybody else see anything different? Okay, so you'll see in King James, I thought it said the thing. Does it say that? What is yours?
A thing.
The thing. All right, so the message was true of one, the thing. What is the thing? Well, whatever it was very troubling to Daniel. Now, some versions, like I have up here, the NIV say a great war, a great conflict. The King James says the thing. But he understood the message, he understood the vision. So it's interesting, as I pointed out, some of the people are going back. And what we're going to see in chapters 11 and 12 is prophecies of the future of the remnant of the children of Israel that are going back. Now, I'll show you a chart that will speak of that remnant. Do y'all remember when Abraham was promised a great nation, this great land of Canaan, a great name, and through thy seed that all the nations shall be blessed? Later in chapter 15, Abraham asks, how do I know these things are going to happen? And so God sets out and tells him about what's going to happen to his descendants. What disturbing thing does God tell Abraham about his children? You remember that, chapter 15. It had something to do with 400 years. All right, he has no children at this time yet, but God's saying, you're going to have a whole bunch of children, and guess what? They're going to be slaves in a foreign country and serve a foreign master. Is that disturbing news to hear that your children, your grandchildren, your lineage are going to be slaves in another country? But he says, after that, I'll bring them back here. But then he says, Abraham, don't worry. You'll have a nice life. You'll die a ripe old age, and you'll see none of this. Like, whew. Well, not the case with Daniel. He's hearing about things that's going to happen to his people. And it's so disturbing. Well, we read on in verse 2. In those days, I had been mourning for 3 entire weeks. Now, I don't know if you've ever had something that drastic, information or event, that it caused you not to eat any tasty food, meat or wine, or without no ointment for the 3 weeks until they're completed. He's deeply troubled about the welfare of his people. Okay? And this is after 70 years in captivity. By the way, how old is Daniel about now?
80
or 90. Probably pushing 90 years old. Okay? And yet he's still a servant to the king. Okay? It's interesting. I put this up there because sometimes you don't want to know the future. Isn't that true? I remember a lady wrote a letter, and she's a Christian in another congregation. I still have it with me. She says, if I would have known. And she just chronicles all the things. She said, if I would have known that the husband I was going to marry, he was going to have PTSD. He would be an alcoholic. He would hold a 45 loaded caliber pistol to my belly and threaten to shoot my baby and kill my life. If I would have known. And she goes, all these things she went through. She says, I would have never married him. I never would have this. But you know, the whole story turns out, he becomes a Christian, and he becomes a faithful member of the Lord's body, and he's totally turned his life around. He said, if I would have known, I would have never married him, and he never would have been saved. You don't want to know what's happening in the future, do you? We think we'd like to know, but think of all the things you've been through. Are you glad you did not know them ahead of time? Because it's hard enough going through them, but if you knew they're going to happen, wouldn't that just drive you crazy sometimes? And we think about old age and what's going to bring upon us, and that's scary enough. Well, Daniel, he sees a vision. He knows exactly what's going to happen, and he can't eat. He's mourning. That's a strong word, not just for being sad. He's mourning for his people. So what's going to happen, Daniel? Well, we'll find out as we come up. So again, Israel went into captivity for 70 years. They've come out, and that's going to be chapters 11, 12. It's going to talk about the great conflict that the remnant that returns are going to have to endure before Christ comes. And so we're going to talk about the time period between Daniel and the time of Christ. More specifically, Malachi ends, the last book of the Old Testament, about 400 years before the time of Jesus. We call that the period between the Testaments, because the Old Testament ends about 400 BC. John the Baptist starts preaching about 30 AD. So those 400 years, God's silent. There's no prophets that are recorded for us. No one's speaking to the people. And yet the people are going through a serious conflict. And we'll talk about that, Lord willing, next week. We'll outline particularly what happens to them. Some terrible things. But yet God's going to be faithful to Abraham and preserve a remnant until the Christ is born. Okay? Yes.
Yes.
Before they
Yes. There's 400 years of conflict before we have slavery and brought
to. I never considered that. There seems to be patterns. Maybe they're coincidence. Maybe they're intentional. And that's interesting. Okay? So that's what Daniel's seeing in this period. And that's why he's in mourning. Okay? And so he calls it the thing, or the great warfare, the great conflict. And he's been mourning three entire weeks because of it. So, but then a certain man. Now that's interesting. Who's this certain man? It just says, a certain man. And we understand it's going to be some type of angelic being. But Kevin already read it for us, so let's kind of break it down. On the 24th day of the first month, I was by the Tigris. We can find that on the map, and that's in modern-day Iraq, that area. I lifted my eyes, looked, behold, there's a certain man. Now, we want to notice his dress. He was dressed, first of all, in linen. Now, linen was the apparel the high priest wore. And also what's interesting, I think I have it right down here. Well, I don't. Linen is in Revelation 19. Actually, let's look at that. When you look at the bride of Christ, when they have the marriage feast in heaven, who's the bride of Christ in Revelation? The church, exactly. And we have been espoused to Jesus. And Ephesians chapter 5 talks of us as being the bride of Christ. So I want you to note the use of linen there. Chapter 19 and verse 7. Let us rejoice and be glad and give glory to the Lord, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his bride has made herself ready. And it was given to her to clothe herself in fine linen, bright and clean, for the fine linen is the righteous acts of the saints. So if you understand one thing about fine linen, what does it represent to us? Righteousness and the way you live. And so when you see a certain man dressed in linen, you're talking about what?
Righteous.
A very righteous individual. Well, so much so, his belt is a pure gold. His body's like beryl. His face, it appears like lightning. His eyes were like flaming torches. What does that picture give to you? If eyes were like torches?
Scary.
Judging. Have you had, what are piercing eyes? See, right, she played right back to me. See, right through you, right? Can the Lord see all, know all? Yes. His eyes are like flaming fire there. Okay? And so we have these flaming torches, and his feet are like polished bronze, and his voice is like many waters. Look at me in Revelation chapter 1. And tell me if this does not sound like Jesus himself. So in Revelation chapter 1, make sure I get there. I'm going to look at the throne. Yeah, we'll just, for time's sake, just start in verse 13. In the middle of the lampstand was one like a son of man, clothed in a robe reaching to his feet, girded across his breast with a golden girdle. Same one, right? His feet and hair were like white, like wool, like snow. His eyes were like a flame of fire. Here are these torches. His feet were like burnished bronze that had caused a glow in the furnace. His voice was the sound of many waters. On his right hand, he held seven stars. Out of his mouth came a sharp two-edged sword. His face was like the sun shining in strength. When I saw him, what did John do? I fell at his feet like a dead man. So most would say this most likely is Jesus, his pre-incarnate form. Now, what I mean by that, Jesus was never the Son of God until he was actually born on the earth. What was he known as before he was born on the earth? The Word, or the Son of Man. You refer to that perhaps, but he's the pre-incarnate, before he became the child of God. He did exist, because in the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And so the question is this Jesus visiting the earth before he's known as Jesus? very similar, but there are some notable differences. But if it's not Jesus, then is it some strong angel? And Revelation talks about a strong or a mighty angels. Angels are all not the same. They have different degrees of power, and they have a hierarchy, because it also speaks of an archangel. And we'll talk about those in the end of our class. Now, arch means chief. So there's chief angels. Is that who appeared to Daniel? Now, Daniel's response is going to be interesting, and it's going to give us maybe a clue, but really not, because he says, I alone saw the vision. The men who were with me did not see the vision, but a great dread fell on them. Why? Well, because they heard the sound going around. Who does that remind you of? Who saw something the people with him didn't hear it?
Saul
on the road to Damascus. Exactly. When Jesus appeared to him, they heard a voice, but didn't understand who was talking. But they saw the bright light. Very similar, isn't it? So if this was Jesus, that'd be interesting. All right? A great dread fell on them, and they ran away to hide themselves. Now here is Daniel's response. I left alone, saw this great vision, and no strength was left in me. For my natural color turned to deathly pallor, and I retained no strength. I heard the sound of his words, as soon as I heard the sound of his words, I fell into a deep sleep on my face, with my face to the ground. What did John happen to him in Revelation 1? Fell to the ground like a dead man. Does Daniel look like a dead man? Just falls asleep on his face. Do we know for certainty? No. But I'm going to guess and understand this is Jesus. All right? Does it make a big difference in the end? No. But everything's so eerily similar. It helps us, but it's not an actual confirmation, because every time someone saw an angel, what did they always do?
They fell
on their face. So it could be just an angel. But I think it's more than it. It's Jesus. Yes?
Could a deep sleep be fainting?
It could be, but here, it could be. What else I can say? I mean, yeah, it could be. He fell asleep, he fainted. Because he has no strength, right? Yes?
The comparison of Revelation 1 with Paul are the only ones that would be even similar to anything else that I read about.
Yeah.
So it would lead one in that direction to believe that it was Christ. Because of what we know.
Well, we'll see later that other people get scared and angels, they're touched, so.
Well, an angel appeared to Mary and Joseph.
Yeah.
Okay, but it was different.
Well, I know. But
this one with the band and everything that describes the eyes of fire,
right,
et cetera, is a self-description that we get of the Son of Man.
It's very similar. It's so, right. That's why we would guess that it is. Okay. But we're not, can't be absolutely certain. It's interesting. I like this psalm. Sing praise the Lord, you his godly ones. Give thanks to his holy name. For his anger is but for a moment. How long have they been in captivity? A moment? In the big picture, it's not very long, right? But weeping may last for the night, but a shout of joy comes in the morning. I don't care how bad it gets. And how long you think you're going to suffer, it always comes to an end, doesn't it? And you might weep all night, but eventually there will be a morning where there will be joy. All right? We have to just trust that. It always works that way. And it might be the day you wake up and you find yourself in heaven. Right? That's when you're going to have that eternal joy. Okay? But he falls asleep because, you know, he's just overwhelmed with this. So we read on chapter 10 now in verse 10. Then behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. And he said to me, O Daniel, man of high esteem. Now that's quite a compliment. It's the second time we've seen it. When God speaks to Daniel and said, God highly esteems you. He thinks very well of you because of his faith, his righteousness, his service to God, Yeah, that's quite a compliment when God says you're highly esteemed. And that'd be in relationship to others as well, right? So understand the words I'm about to tell you. Stand upright, for now I have been sent to you. So when I heard this, when he had spoken this word to me, he says, I stood up trembling. So now he's standing up. Now this is just all a prelude to chapters 11 and 12, okay? So now let's read in verse 12. Then he said to me, do not be afraid, Daniel. From the first day that you set your heart understanding this, and humbling yourself before God, your words were heard, and I've come in response to your words. But, I'm in verse 13, the prince of the kingdom of Persia was withstanding me for 21 days. Then behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I've been left there with the king of Persia. Now I've come to give you an understanding of what will happen to your people in the latter days, for the vision pertains to the days yet future. That's why I say it's things that are going to happen. All right? Now, some really interesting things here. We're talking about angels. First of all, you're going to get understanding. You're going to know what's going to happen. But he says, from the day that you, if we did a timeline, when the day you decided to try to understand what's going to happen, what does it say happened?
Conflict.
From the first day you set your heart understanding and humbled yourself before God, your words were heard. So what's he praying for? Understanding. And I have come in response to your words. So I want you to see the first thing, if you want wisdom, if you want to know God's will, you have to have a humble heart. You have to have a humble heart that says, Lord, I just want to understand your will. I want to know how you want me to live because I want to walk with you. Because that's all what it's about, walking with God. And it takes a humble heart that realizes it's not in me to direct my own steps and I need your help. And so that is coupled then with prayer, because he says your word. So no doubt he's been praying, right? So from the moment, now I don't know how long it's taken, but now this angelic or being appears, right? And he says, from the beginning when you set your heart to know that I was sent, now I'm here. Now, so we're going to draw a line, and this is above the arch. We've done this before. So here we're on the earth, and here's the birds where they fly, and then, of course, the stars. What's this area up here? We call it the third heaven, right? What exists up there? God. What else? Of course, Jesus sits on the throne there now. Angels, right? And Satan. All the spiritual entities. And so what is this line that separates between the two? I saw it, the arch. What is that line? It's just the dividing line between the physical realm and the spiritual realm. Is it actually a line? No. Could there be an angel in this room and you would not know it? Is that possible? Yes, because there was an angel when Balaam was on his donkey that was going to cut him down. It was standing in the road. Did he see it?
The donkey did,
but did Balaam see it?
No.
So this line that separates the physical from the spiritual is not a line. It's just that difference between the spiritual and physical. But they can coexist in the same space. You understand what I'm saying? You say, I don't understand that. Neither do I. Because that's what's so hard. Now, what he's doing here for us is pulling back the curtain of that arch, and we're going to get a glimpse into the spiritual realm. How do I say this? I don't want to overstate it. I don't want to say it's the real, only real realm, but it is the eternal real realm. Because this is real to us. Everything we're doing matters, doesn't it? But this is just for a short while. It's all going to be gathered up. I'm talking about the universe, the earth, and just gone. And what's the only thing that will be left? The spiritual. This is temporary. Okay? When Christ comes, he's going to destroy the heavens and its works. That's all the universe, the stars, the earth. It'll be just crunched up and gone, burned, right? And that's why I say it is the only ultimate reality, the spiritual realm. You with me on that? Okay, now our spirits will live in that realm. Because right now our spirits are trapped in or contained in a physical body. So here's what's crazy. What does he say in verse 13? I would have been here sooner, but what happened? The prince of the kingdom of Persia was withstanding me or fighting me. For how long? 21 days he's battling the prince of Persia.
Is that the same 21 days that Daniel was in mourning?
3 weeks. Isn't that interesting? 3 weeks, 21 days. Or else I would have been here. All right, so the question is, I'll ask it for you, what's this prince of the kingdom of Persia? So here are the possibilities. The first one is it's a political leader. It's a king. That's a prince of Persia, right? Cyrus, the king of Persia. Do you think an angel would have any problems dealing with a physical king? No problem. We're going to see later one angel killed 185,000 people in a night. So I don't think it's probably a political leader. Well, maybe it's a good angel. Some people suggest that. Well, why would a good angel be withstanding a good angel? Probably not. Well, how about a wicked angel? And you say, well, are there wicked angels? Well, we'll look at a passage later in 2 Corinthians 11. Satan, in Revelation 12, has his own angels. And what realm do they live? Up there in the spiritual. All right? In the spiritual realm. So most would understand that this prince of Persia, and I can't answer your questions, but I'll just present a picture and you can think about it, would be some type of angelic spiritual being that is behind the power, the political power of the kingdom of Persia. Now, let me set that up. In Daniel, what one lesson we've learned over and over and over, who rules in the kingdoms of men? God. He's called the Lord of hosts. He's the Lord of every angelic being, every power in the heavens and on the earth. Now, Jesus himself said, all authority has been given to me where? On heaven, in heaven, and on earth. So, in heaven doesn't refer to earthly kings, does it? That's on earth. Who's in charge of the angelic beings? Well, Jesus, would that include both Satan's and the good ones? Yes.
Some are rebellious.
All right. So the idea is there is a spiritual evil force, an angel, that is backing the prince of Persia. And we see that in the book of Revelation. That's why this is not out of line. Because we see there is an angel that comes from Satan that helps bring Rome against Jerusalem. Yes, Terry Sue.
I have always understood it to be that it wasn't necessarily a spiritual battle, but that it was an influential battle.
Influential.
He was trying to get him to make a decision that they wanted Persia to go a certain direction and the prince wasn't doing what they wanted. So they had to keep influencing them for the 3 weeks until he stopped withstanding them.
So then it would be the political king. Right. And I have to give that to be impossible. Did you understand what she was saying? That God directs kingdoms, and so he's trying to influence the kingdom to go that way, and it took 21 days to get the king of the literal king to go that way. Very possible. All right? Yes?
Well, I think this leads up to Jesus dying on the cross and going down and binding Satan. Until that happened, there was conflict.
That's right.
Once Jesus bound Satan, now there's no conflict.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, that's mostly accurate. That's right. Well, here's the other clue is, behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me. And we're going to know Michael as an archangel. Exactly. He came to help me because I'd been left there with the kings of Persia. How did he help it? Maybe it's, again, influencing the physical king, or maybe the spiritual powers are behind it. Okay? Now, we're not done. But it's just very interesting. All it does is perk your interest, and we really don't have definite answers. But let me just say this. What happens politically is not just always by chance and coincidence. God's in charge of it all. And we have lots of questions why he allows a particular nation to rise up, or some terrorist organization like some country in Africa slaughter innocents. But just rest assured, behind it all, there are spiritual battles going on. And whether they're influencing the spiritual or battling the wicked angels or the actual people on the earth, there's angels directing this. Isn't that what we're seeing here? We have angels involved in the political and the kingdom affairs of man. And don't ever think that this world is just running amok and God's not in charge. I was studying with David, and it was interesting. We made this point about Babel. What? Noah, when he got out of the ark, what was he told to do? Go fill, populate the earth. What did they do? Chapter 11. They're a centralized city, one language, and they're trying to build a tower so they can stay together. And God said, if we let them finish, nothing will be impossible. We need to spread them. So how easily did he do that? Change their language and they scattered. And that's where all the tribes of the world come from, and that's why it was populated. God's in charge. Man thinks he's all that, and just that easily, he changes the direction of all humanity. Okay? So here, we see the same thing going on, and it just makes me ask more questions than I have answered. What were you doing for 21 days? But he said, now I've come to give you an understanding of what will happen to your people in the latter days, for the vision pertains to yet the future. Now let's look at some passages, and because we have just enough time. Look with me, first of all, one chapter, verse 9. We're going to learn some things about Michael here, the one that came to help him. First of all, look at verse 6. He's talking about people that do not know how to submit themselves to the will of God. He says there are angels who did not keep their own domain, but abandoned their proper abode. He's kept them in eternal bonds under darkness for the judgment of the great day. What? They didn't keep their proper abode or role. Verse 8, yet in the same manner, these men also by dreaming defile flesh, reject authority, and they revile angelic majesties. You can revile angelic majesties. Now, verse 9, Michael didn't do that. Here, Michael is called the what? The only archangel that's mentioned. And he is one of the only two angels in all of the Bible that are mentioned by name. Who's the other one? Gabriel. All right? And we'll talk about him in a second. But Michael, the archangel, when he disputed with the devil and argued about the body of Moses, did not dare pronounce against him a railing judgment, but said, the Lord rebuke you. The only recorded words of Michael are these four words, the Lord rebuke you. Now, let me just make an observation. I can ask the question. We'll ask the question first. What were they fighting about over Moses' body? Where it should be buried. How do you know that? Who said that? It's a good, I would guess that, but does it say that?
Well, it looks like they were fighting over his spirit.
No, it says his body.
Oh, body, yes.
Yeah. But who is Michael, the archangel, fighting with?
The devil.
We do know that. There is conflict in the spiritual realm above the arch between devil himself and Michael, one of the most powerful angels, over someone's body. You say, a body? Why does God care? Well, it was Moses, first of all. But I take my takeaway is this. If Jesus said not one hair of your head, you know, they're all numbered, and if a sparrow falls to the ground and God takes notice, he'll notice everything about your life, won't he? There's nothing incidental on this earth to God. If he's arguing about bodies with Satan himself or fighting, you know he's concerned deeply about every aspect of your life. Would you agree? I'm talking about his children. All right, somebody have their hand up and talked over you. Yeah, Clinton.
I've often wondered the wisdom of God would say, he don't want nobody to want Moses to be buried for a reason. The reason being, it would be like that snake they raised up and all that kind of
yes.
thing.
Yes.
It'd be a place of distraction from God's purpose.
Now, his answer was the reason they didn't want to know where Moses was buried because people would worship it and make pilgrimages to it. That's a great answer, but it's our opinion. But I agree with you. But it doesn't say that. But I agree with you. Okay? All right? I just want to distinguish the two. All right? Look in Revelation 12. Here's another thing that happens. When Jesus was born and Satan was there to devour him, we see in chapter 12, verse 5, the woman gave birth to a male child to rule all the nation with a rod and iron, and he was caught up to his throne. That's obviously Jesus the Christ. Now, verse 7, there's a war in heaven, and who's battling? Michael, that's the archangel, and his angels. Now, we learn something else about it. Archangel, at least. They have their own angels under them, like a battalion of soldiers, if you would. And his angels were waging war with the dragon. Now, who's the dragon? We know that, verse 9. The great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who's called the devil and Satan. So let's go back to verse 7. He was waging war with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels. Now, Satan has what? Angels that he uses to battle Michael and his angels. Where's this all taking place? Above the arch. Where is it? The spiritual realm. Did it literally happen? Yes. Who prevailed? Well, obviously, Michael. The great dragon was thrown down. The serpent of old was called the devil and Satan. He was thrown down the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. Verse 10, a loud voice was heard in heaven, said, now salvation, the power and the kingdom of God and authority of Christ has come. For the accuser of the brethren has been thrown down. Who accuses them? Before our God, day and night. This is when the kingdom was established and salvation came, when Christ applied the blood and all those righteous saints of the Old Testament were free. But Satan has been accusing them, rightly so, but no longer. But there was a great war. He wasn't going to let go of them easily, was he? There was a battle, and who was battling? Angelic beings. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We'll skip that one, but look at 2 Corinthians 11. Another interesting passage, because now we see the devil has his angels. Verse 13 of 2 Corinthians 11 talks about false apostles that disguise themselves as apostles of Christ. So verse 14, he says, that's no surprise. Oh, really? Why? Because Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Therefore, it's not surprising if his servants, he has his servants, disguise themselves as servants of righteousness. So that would be these false apostles is what he's referring to. But Satan sometimes appears as a good angel. Now, what does Joseph Smith claim he saw? An angel who directed him these golden tablets from whence came forth the Book of Mormon. Now, there's no proof and evidence that he actually saw an angel, but if he did, where did that angel come from? It was Satan, because he's teaching a whole different gospel. Well, that's why Galatians says, even though an angel preached another gospel, let him be accursed. Yes?
It's no different than that apostolic faith that we saw in Amsterdam.
Oh, yeah.
They walk around with staffs and the people bow down to them.
Claiming.
And they turn around and say that they have all these abilities to heal. But if you go and you talk to them, they can't do anything.
Yeah.
But yet they claim they can't.
Yeah.
It's false, but many, many follow.
Yeah. Look at Luke chapter 10. I want you to see that one. when the disciples were sent out on a limited commission, they were given authority to cast out demons. So they come back and they're all excited. Verse 17, Lord, even the demons are subject to us in your name. And Jesus said this, yeah, well, you were out there doing that. I was watching Satan fall from heaven like lightning. What does that mean? You were binding the strong man by casting out demons. Those demons were angelic beings that work for who? Satan. And as you bound them and cast them out, Satan is being bound himself and he's losing his power. Because when you're cast out of heaven, we already saw in the prophets, that's a picture of a king or a power being defeated when he's cast down. All right? So that's interesting. Then Matthew chapter 25, it's interesting, last one. What happens in the end? In verse 41. We see when the Son of Man comes in glory, verse 31. So that's what we're talking about. In verse 41, he will say to those who are on his left, that's the ones that didn't help others, depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire, which has been prepared for the devil and his angel. So the ultimate abode is going to be, you know, this lake of fire, the second death, and all these evil angels and Satan will be cast into it. Now, 1 Thessalonians says Jesus will descend when that happens. And do you remember what marks his coming? There are several things. 1 Thessalonians chapter 1 or 4, verse 13. Trumpet sound.
The devil rises first.
Oh, yeah, you got trumpet sound. All eyes are going to see him. He's going to bring the spirits of all the people that have died in Christ. What's going to mark his coming? So everyone go, ho, trumpet sound, and then what? All right, you better look. No guessing. You guys, the answer's in the Bible. It's not on my forehead, so don't look at me. Look in the Bible. What's going to signal the coming of Christ? You got the first one, the trumpet sound. Verse 16. The Lord will descend with heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet of God. 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 16. Now, the only archangel that's mentioned is Michael. Unless Gabriel is one as well, a very good chance. But that angel is going to introduce Christ is coming again. And you will not miss it. All right? Guaranteed. So let's wrap this up. When I heard the word spoken, he said, I was speechless. And someone, resembled a human being, was touching my lips. And he says, as a result of vision, anguish has come upon me. See, that's why he sees this great conflict for his people that's going to come. He said, there's no strength in me, nor is any breath left in me. Then the human appearance person said, he touched him again, said, you're of high esteem. Peace be with you. Take courage and be courageous. And he spoke to me and he said, my Lord, for you have strengthened me. Isn't that beautiful? When just saying the words, be strong or be courageous, that strengthened him. Then the last verse here. Do you understand why I've come to you? Now you shall, I shall fight against the prince of Persia. Where is he going back? He's fought with him 21 days. Michael helped him, but he's got to go back. And I'm going for them. Behold, the prince of Greece is about to come. What? Well, we'll talk about that next week. But no one's with me except who? Michael, the archangel, and he calls him what? Daniel's prince. Now, I mean, it's more complicated. Do we have angels that are assigned to help each one of you? Hebrews chapter 2 says exactly that. We're not talking about Michael, we're out of time. But Hebrews chapter 2 right here. Chapter 1. Are they not all ministering spirits set out to render service for the sake of those who inherit eternal life? There are angels working for you and me, right? You believe it?
Yes.
Can you see them? Are they there?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Thank you very much. We're out of time.